Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIS podcast, which is being brought to you by the GAS programme. My name's James Henderson. I'm Head of GAS Research at OIS, and I'm here today with my colleagues Mike Forward and Jack Sharples, who are both Senior Research Fellows, to discuss the latest GAS Quarterly and the outlook for gas markets. I should date this podcast because it's very current, recording on the 26th of October at 12:30 UK time. So all the price references are to that date. But before we get on, welcome Mike, welcome Jack, back to the podcast.
Hello, thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be back.
Okay, well, look, the quarterly is coming out next week in the first week of November. I would say probably there are some interesting highlights and there are some not quite so interesting ones. But one of the interesting ones, Mike, is prices, where we've seen quite a lot of contradictory forces at play, from filling of storage to outages and potential strikes. Why don't you bring us up to date with where we are on prices and what have been the main triggers?
Currently, prices in sort of the November quotes, if you like, from TTF and LNG Northwest Europe and the Asian prices, sort of settling down around sort of the $14 to $15 range. Asian prices slightly above LNG delivered to Europe, which again is slightly less than TTF. So there's almost a normalization of the market. Now, prices have come up sort of steadily since the summer. There's been a few ups and downs. Concerns about the Gorgon and Wheatstone strikes for some reason sort of surged in prices and that eased back. And then obviously concern about the Israel-Gaza situation in terms of the impact on potential Egypt LNG exports. But again, that's sort of settled down. I think there's a lot of noise goes on in the market. The market is very tight and the market tends to react to perceived bad news. And then after a few days, say, well, maybe it's not got as bad as we thought. And obviously the Gorgon Wheatstone strikes have now been sort of called off. So the market has sort of settled into what might be called a balanced situation, still tight, but no shocks to the market.
Well, as I said, there's been some exciting stuff going on. There's been some not so exciting stuff going on. And Jack, I hesitate to come to you for the not exciting stuff first, but Russian flows aren't really that exciting anymore, are they? I mean, we seem to have reached a stable level, but Norway is more exciting. So do you want to talk us through that?
I think you're absolutely right in the sense that Russia isn't that exciting anymore. I think, you know, we've settled into a volume of flow from Russia now of monthly averages of about 75 to 80 million cubic meters a day, which is very much in line with our estimations of the long-term contracts that Gazprom still has active for supply to Europe. So that's anybody that's still been willing to pay in rubles and hasn't been affected by things like the closure of Nord Stream. By contrast, you're absolutely right. Norway has been very interesting. Interesting being probably the diplomatic word. There's been a lot of maintenance over the summer that has severely curtailed Norwegian supply to Europe by pipeline. I should say that Gassco has been very good at reporting both the planned and unplanned maintenance, and that has tied in very closely with what we've seen in the physical supply. The good news is that after a summer of very extensive maintenance, those physical supplies from Norway, those daily supplies, are now back up to what we would consider to be something like a normal start of winter level. So just to put some numbers on that, September was really a low point in which we averaged about 180 million cubic meters per day of supply. Now, we estimate the Norwegian system capable of supplying up to 350, maybe 355 million cubic meters per day at an absolute peak. But in a normal winter, you might get somewhere between 335 and 345 million cubic meters a day. For the first 3 weeks in October, we're at about 310. So we're definitely moving in the right direction.
And I guess those numbers highlight, don't they, just how important Norway has become in terms of gas supply to Europe. I mean, perhaps you can just give us a bit of context around, you know, the share that Norway now has for both pipeline imports to Europe, but actually as its contribution to the supply as a whole.
Well, Norwegian pipeline supply now is greater than the pipeline imports from Russia, Algeria, Libya, and Azerbaijan combined. So the first 3 weeks of October, we've seen Norwegian supply of just under 310 million cubic meters a day, whereas the Russian, North African, and Azeri supply combined is just over 200. The Norwegian supply is also high compared to what we're getting from European production, that is UK and EU production. of about 170 million cubic meters per day. And the Norwegian supply is also comparable to what we've seen from LNG send out in the first 3 weeks of October, which are averaged around 317 million cubic meters per day. So in that regard, Norway really is very important. And the lack of what you might call flex in supply from other sources, particularly the production and non-Norwegian pipeline supply, does rather mean that the market will react very strongly to any news of Norwegian maintenance, any potential curtailments. And equally, once Norwegian supply settles back to its normal level, it does sort of seem to have a bit of a calming effect on the market.
Indeed, and I guess it also highlights, Mike, as I come back to you, the growing importance of LNG supply and the global LNG market in terms of providing that flex. So I think, you know, the quarterly reports on our expectations and the reality of LNG supply, and we seem now to be finally seeing the surge of supply that we were expecting at the start of the year. Can you just give us an update on that?
For the first sort of 9 months of the year, then total trade was up about 8.5 BCM, which is, we're still running behind what we were saying at the beginning of the year, although that's been cut back a little bit by some few technical issues and feed gas problems. But yeah, we are seeing, in terms of the amount of LNG leaving the export terminals, that's been running ahead of the amount arriving in import terminals. And the latest data for October just show quite a big surge in LNG exports, especially from the US terminals. And also, I guess we've now got one cargo from Tangguh Train 3 in Indonesia. So the anticipated fourth quarter surge now appears to be materialising. On the imports basis, we're seeing October being significantly above last October by about 6 or 7%. And on the import side, it's obviously China has been driving the growth since about sort of April, May time. Southeast Asia has been continuing to grow. Europe's has sort of eased back a little bit since the first sort of 5 months of the year. And Japan has been the main weakness, allowing LNG to come to Europe. But in October, Japan does look as though it's picked up again quite strongly, rising above last year's levels, probably for the first time this year.
Yeah, which brings us neatly to Asian demand, which again is in another indicator which was pretty slack for the first half of the year. I think in Q4, again, we're now kind of seeing the growth and the surge that we had been expecting throughout the year. So, I mean, China's back. Now you say Japan is back. We're seeing the re-emergence of the Asian market. Is that right?
I think we are. And I think fourth quarter Asia will be very strong with, as you say, China continuing to grow. And also, we've seen a rebound in India, Pakistan and Bangladesh in the last 2 to 3 months. And that looks to be continuing. Fortunately, this surge in total Asia demand, with Japan coming back and Korea and Taiwan, you know, beginning to recover as well, is coinciding with the surge in supply. So it's not necessarily putting undue pressure on the European markets. So we are seeing, you know, potentially in October, imports into Europe again, possibly coming above sort of last year's levels or at last year's levels. So the supply is helping to meet this surging Asian demand.
Bringing us back to Europe neatly there, Jack, let me come back to you. I mean, another trend that the quarterly highlights is that European demand, which was declining, continuing to decline very sharply in the first half of the year, that decline is really slowing down, isn't it? I mean, what's happening there?
Well, the long-term, I say long-term, the medium-term trend of the last sort of 18 months to 2 years during this crisis is that, on the one hand, you've seen both residential consumers and industrial consumers reacting to these high prices by adjusting their consumption downwards. We've also been lucky last winter to have a very mild winter. I think now we've reached, looking back at the third quarter, you know, you reached a summer point where you don't have that winter demand for heating. So obviously the difference between a cold winter and a mild winter is quite substantial, whereas in a lot of Europe, you don't really have too much air conditioning load during the summer, particularly Northern Europe. So it tends to be a bit flatter year on year in that regard. But certainly if you look at the figures now for August, September, and the first 3 weeks of October, the figures for 2023 are increasingly similar to the figures for last year. And I think in that regard, we may well have bottomed out, certainly in terms of summer demand now. There's not much left to do in terms of pushing it down. rather different question as to what happens in the next several months. Very much depends on the weather and seasonal temperature-driven demand.
Okay, well, we'll come to the winter outlook in a second, because that's one of the main articles in the quarterly is about that. But before we go there, let's just review where we are as we head into winter on storage. You've been highlighting how storage has been filling and we're getting close to tank tops almost. So where were we at the start of winter on the 1st of October?
I haven't got the figure for the 1st of October, but I can tell you where we were 48 hours ago, which is 98.6% full for EU storage as a whole. By, I would say, the end of the first week of October, we were probably at absolute records for the amount of gas held in storage. And where we are now is about 105 BCM. Now, to put that into some kind of context, you would say that's probably equivalent to about a quarter of what you might call the new normal for European demand, given some of those demand declines that we have just spoken about. There isn't really much space left. There's probably we can hold about another extra 1 BCM for injection into European storage. And so this is having a bit of a knock-on effect in terms of gas being physically moved into Ukraine for injections into storage facilities in Western Ukraine. But of course, the extent to which that will continue over the next few weeks does rather depend on, again, waiting to see if the cold weather picks up and storage injections just come to a halt and get ready to start taking it back out again.
So do we know how much gas has gone into Ukrainian storage, you know, which we can add to that 105 BCM?
Ukrainian storage, according to Gas Infrastructure Europe at present, is about 125 terawatt hours for those who are looking on the GIE website. Now, that equates to about 11.7 BCM, which is probably several BCM higher than it was this time last year. And if you look at the data from the Ukrainian TSO, TSO UA, that shows you that several BCM, probably about 2.5 to 3 BCM, has been imported into Ukraine and placed into what they call their customs warehouse, where any trader, European or Ukrainian, can import gas into Ukraine, not pay customs duty on it, hold it in storage for up to 3 years, and at any point during that period, make a decision as to whether to either re-export it back to Europe, in which case you're not paying any customs duty on it, or you can take it out of storage, pay the customs, and sell it into the Ukrainian market. My expectation would be that it will be sold into the Ukrainian market, given how much Europe has in storage in the EU. But even so, it's very interesting to see that that is being used to absorb some of the short-term, what you might call excess, on the European market.
Okay, so we're heading into the winter then with storage full, pretty much, with demand in Europe bottoming out and demand in Asia starting to accelerate as we'd expect at the start of the year. So let's review the winter outlook before we come to summer 24. Mike, let me come back to you. You've mentioned both surging demand in Asia and increases in LNG supply. What's your take on how this is all going to pan out over the next 6 months of the Northern Hemisphere winter?
Yeah, obviously there's quite a few caveats here. We sort of are looking ahead in terms of temperature, but let's sort of look at a baseline sort of scenario. So in terms of LNG supply, as I mentioned, this quarter is looking to quite strong, continuing into next quarter as well, when we could see Arctic 2 Train 1 come on, possibly Tortue, Tang will be ramping up. Stronger US supplies are all suggesting we could get, you know, for the two winter quarters, Q4, Q1, a year-on-year increase of supply of about 14 to 15 billion cubic metres. So that's a reasonably strong growth. So where is all that going to go? Certainly compared to last year China was still quite weak. China has now picked up. So we're looking maybe half of that increase in supply going to China. Southeast Asia just carrying on pretty much month-by-month increases, maybe sort of 3 BCM there. As we said, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh picking up maybe another 3 BCM there. And the rest of the world sort of flattish. So the Asian markets have taken most of the sort of rise in supply. Possibly a little bit of increase in Central South America, mainly in the Caribbean area and outside Brazil, where imports are still weakish due to the strong hydro. So that leaves basically for the winter, Europe can take pretty much the same amount of LNG between October and end of March in this winter as it did last winter. So that gives us sort of a nice balanced picture for Europe. So on that basis, this is on the assumption of there's not a cold Northern Hemisphere winter. So normally sort of winter where Asian demand takes most of the supply in Europe, there's enough in Europe to come as it did last year.
So with that in mind, Jack, if we come back to Europe then, in the analysis in the quarterly kind of concludes with where we think storage might be at the end of winter and what the implications are for refilling next summer. So talk us through the kind of assumptions you've made with all the caveats around weather we understand and what you kind of think is going to be the outcome at the end of winter.
Well, starting from, as Mike suggested, if Europe imports similar levels of LNG to last year, and given that the year-on-year decline in European demand seems to be bottoming out and basing our assumption on having a winter somewhat similar to last year. Last year was very mild, but which makes it sort of unlikely that it will be any milder still this winter. If anything, it's likely to be a little bit colder, which would push demand up a little bit. But of course, last winter, we had more of an issue with the French nuclear fleet being offline. So probably there'll be a bit of a compensating factor there. So if we assume that overall demand is pretty similar year on year, then taking some assumptions about European production, obviously we've lost Groningen in the Netherlands, making some assumptions about production elsewhere in Europe being slightly down year on year, seeing Norwegian supply back up to a solid winter level of about 335 million cubic meters per day. Russian supply looks pretty stable, about 75 million cubic meters a day. North African supply, likewise, pretty stable, just over 90 million cubic meters a day. Azeri supply via the Trans-Adriatic pipeline, again, just over 32 million cubic meters per day. So that's all pretty stable. We think we've got a decent degree of visibility there. And then, as I say, given Mike's assumption about LNG availability, putting that into the mix as well, when you take it all together, we think that during the winter, we will probably take out of storage somewhere between 40 and 45 BCM, which, given that we're at 105 BCM of stocks now, still leaves us with somewhere between 60 and 65 BCM in storage at the end of winter, which is really where we want to be, frankly speaking. The high level of storage stocks that we've got at present aren't due to a rapid stock build over the summer. They're due to the fact that we began the summer of 2023 with storage at a very high level. And we want to really repeat the trick so that we don't have to inject a huge amount next summer. If we were to take a lot out of storage in the coming winter, and instead of taking between 40 and 45 BCM out, we were to take between 60 and 65 BCM out, which could be possible in a cold winter, particularly if, you know, as Mike says, if it's cold across the Northern Hemisphere, so you see more Asian LNG demand pulling LNG away from Europe, as well as European demand being higher, then that would be a sort of a more concerning scenario, just because of how difficult it might be to replenish those supplies in the summer of 2024.
Clearly, the winter temperature effect is pretty critical then in terms of whether we're going to end on a comfortable note or not. And I guess the difference between 40 to 45 BCM out of storage and 60 to 65 being the kind of critical range we need to watch out for. I guess with that range in mind, let's come back to, you know, the summer of 24 and let's start outside Europe. Mike, you know, what are you seeing for LNG supply during that summer and how much might be available for Europe if, you know, depending on how much we need to refill in storage?
I think for 24 as a whole, then we're looking for quite a significant increase in LNG supply, both from the turnaround of Freeport, obviously, which will be a full year of Freeport next year. The ones we mentioned coming on, Arctic Train 2, Tangguh, and Golden Pass sometime during the year in the US also coming on. So we're looking at potentially, absent any major technical issues, feed gas problems, which could always occur, about a 30 BCM rise in energy supply, which is sort of the beginnings of this surge of LNG over the next sort of 4 to 5 years. So it's sort of starting towards the end of the year. So for the summer, I mean, maybe slightly less than half of that will be a summer increase year on year, maybe sort of 13 BCM. So where's that going to go? So I think in the case of China, because last summer or the summer just gone, China was starting to grow, then the increase in China may be not as rapid as we've seen in the last few months. Southeast Asia carrying on, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh carrying on. And possibly given the weakness of, let's say, Japan, this summer was very weak, possibly some recovery in Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. So again, Asia may sort of take round about 10 or so BCM of the 13 BCM rise. One of the uncertain areas is going back to Central South America. If you remember a few years ago, Brazil energy imports surged enormously when they had a really bad hydro, low rainfall as a result of El Nino. We've had an El Nino this year. Now, at some point in time, this could lead to low rainfall again in South America around Brazil. We're not sure when. So a little bit of uncertainty. We could see some rebound in Brazil and Chile LNG imports if there is lowish hydro again. Taking all that together, not much change in the rest of the world. You know, Asia and Central South America could take up most of the, almost all the increase in supply, leaving Europe pretty much importing the same amounts it imported this year. So it's a very similar summer picture to a winter picture. So on, you know, Jack will talk about the summer situation in Europe, but if Europe needs the same amount of LNG as had this year, then things are looking reasonably comfortable.
Okay, Jack, let me come back to you then. It looks comfortable as long as we need the same amount of LNG as last year. I guess that's going to depend on how much gas we've used in storage. But I guess the other thing that's looming is the debate about whether the Ukraine transit route will still be open from the beginning of 2025 onwards, because that contract's up for negotiation next year. And clearly it's uncertain as to whether, you know, the Ukrainians and the Russians will be able to reach any agreement there. So how do you see the summer of next year with that Ukraine question hanging over us?
Well, I think first and foremost, the uncertainty of that sort of Damocles hanging over Ukrainian transit does mean that there is likely to be a significant seasonal spread between, for example, front month prices in the summer of 2024 and forward prices for Q1 2025. So that would motivate traders and market participants to be putting gas into storage anyway. You can layer on top of that the European Commission storage targets, which in any case want to see storage pretty full by the 1st of October 2024 anyway. So I think given that, and given that, you know, I alluded to European storage being full at the moment, not because of huge summer injections, but because of a favorable starting position at the start of summer. Just as a side note, three of the last four summers since 2020 have seen European storage injections in the ballpark range of 45 BCM. It was only last year when we put 65 BCM into storage because of the concerns over Russian supply, which obviously had significant impact on prices in the summer of 2022, that we saw much more than that. So if we're looking to put 45 BCM back into storage in the summer of 2024 to get ourselves back to full capacity by the start of winter because of the Ukrainian transit issue hanging over our heads, then I think if, as Mike says, LNG supply to Europe is the same as in 2023, if European pipeline imports from non-Norwegian suppliers are all pretty much of a muchness year on year, which there's no reason why they shouldn't be, and in fact, because we don't have the substantial maintenance on the Norwegian routes that we had this year, that actually Norwegian pipeline supply should be higher year on year next summer, then that's more than enough to offset the sort of the slight decline, the ongoing decline in European production. And as long as, you know, the decline in European gas demand has effectively bottomed out, then it all looks like it might balance. Now, of course, one of the uncertainties is if prices do start to fall away, do we see more of a European industrial demand bounce back during the summer of 2024? Do we see any changes in, say, for example, gas demand for power generation? Any one of those things could sort of tip the balance, let's say. Fingers crossed, all being much of a muchness plus a little bit of extra from Norway should mean that as long as we don't completely draw down our storage stocks this winter, that the replenishment in the summer of 2024 should be a reasonable assumption, let's say.
Okay, well, let's just bring this to a conclusion then. I mean, we've got quite a benign picture here for the short term. I guess, question to you, Mike, as we close, winter temperatures apart, which I think we clearly know are a risk, what do you see as the key kind of risks to the system over the next 12 months? And what's your outlook for the medium term, kind of going beyond 2024?
The weather's always the main risk in terms of the shock to demand. I guess on the LNG side, it would be another supply disruption. Now, we've thought about a supply disruption through the Gorgon and Wheatstone strikes, where they've gone away. Unless the situation in the Middle East escalates wider than Israel Gaza, there's probably not much risk there. Obviously, there's risk to shipping if there's it does escalate. But then you're looking at maybe sort of extended maintenance in a plant we're not sure about. You know, heaven forbid, there's another accident at a plant which causes it to go down. So I think, absent the weather, all the risks are on sort of the supply side. China is always the elephant in the room in terms of demand, but economic activity has been not that strong in China, and the surge has come from increasing thermal power, including gas there, and obviously strong growth in the gas-intensive industries sort of helped there. So I think this supply disruption will be the sort of main risk. Going to the medium term, as I alluded to, 2024 is the start of the sort of surge LNG supply. We're looking at 2025, then we're looking at 24 is about a 30 BCM increase. 25, we're looking at about a 40 BCM increase in LNG supply. And then when you get to 2026, we're looking at about an 80 BCM increase. So taken together, that's a 30% increase in supply compared to 2023. So this is the light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm not sure demand can necessarily keep up with that pace. So we should see some alleviation in the market. That sort of outlook is very consistent with the IEA's recent medium-term outlook. In fact, their winter-summer was very similar to ours, as also is the rise in energy supply. So I think we're pretty much on the same page as the IEA, certainly in sort of the medium term.
Okay, well, that's a probably a good note to end on. I mean, I think still slightly tight market for 24, keep an eye off on the weather and then any supply interruptions. But for consumers, at least, things looking much better from 25 onwards. So a good note to end on, I think. I would just highlight to everyone that the analysis behind this podcast is in the latest Gas Quarterly, which will be on our website from next week, which is the first week of November. So look out for that from the 1st November. In the meantime, thank you very much, Jack. Thank you, Mike, for your contributions today. Thanks to everyone for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Please take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. Thank you.